sights to show you.
I'm gonna try to not look at the clock, so I lowered it.
Okay.
Because I get
paranoid. I'm aware.
You sit across from me all the time.
Yeah.
So you see me.
I'm like, we're okay. And you're like, wrap it up.
All right. So speaking of time and wrapping things up, welcome to...
And we're not talking about my date last night.
I hate you. You texted me and I was like, he's still on a date. Oh, God. I'm just going to leave it. Anyway, welcome everyone to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast, episode 12. I am your host, Alex Webster. And as always, because we record in his bedroom, I am joined by Anthony Fuentes.
They don't have to know that. You can fluff it up. We record in his studio, we have the studio though. We don't use it. My bad.
Because it's filled with stuff.
It's good storage.
Yeah. And your room is decent for now.
That's
so
true. It works. You guys appreciate it, right?
Sure.
They can't answer us, but no. Okay.
So, welcome. Today we are talking about the 2003 flick, A Tale of Two Sisters.
Oh, shit. We got some foreign horror, you pieces of shit. How about that?
We are talking about basically at this point, a classic piece of Korean horror. So I'm really excited about this because I've basically been nagging Anthony to do Asian horror since the get-go.
I did a Perfect Blue.
Yeah, but that was because we found it and we basically had to do it.
That's a good point. Okay. Yeah.
And you have already seen it.
Yeah. Okay. Now she's got me on all fronts here. Keep going.
Yeah. So, I pushed for this, and this is a movie that neither of us have seen. So we're both relatively new to the film.
Although it has a very cool legacy looking at it, like in terms of what people's notoriety, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So
for those of you who don't know, A Tale of Two Sisters is a Korean film. It also, in Korean, it's called Rose Flower Red Lotus. So it's a different title. Mm-hmm. It's a 2003 South Korean psychological horror drama film. So, and they throw all those words in there for good reason. It's terrifying, but it's very psychological, and it's also very dramatic.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So this film was written and directed by Kim Ji-woon. The film is inspired by a Joseon Dynasty era folktale entitled Changhwa Hongryeonjeong, which has been adapted to several films. So the plot focuses on a recently released patient from a mental institution who returns home with her sister, only to face disturbing events between her stepmother and the ghost haunting their house, all of which are connected to a dark past in the family's history.
Ooh, did you actually read or look up the folktale?
No, I didn't. Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
It's really fascinating.
Tell me about it.
Well, it's a lot like the movie.
So it's just like the movie, but...
A little bit, but it's a folktale.
Okay.
So there's a lot of...
So there's like...
There's like a whole like abortion subplot. Not abortion, but like a fake
pregnant
miscarriage subplot.
Oh.
Yeah.
So is it more dramatic?
It's really gruesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it like a cautionary tale?
It's more of like a...
Because we talked about this later.
I mean, I would say it's a cautionary tale against evil stepmothers. That's it. That's a very prominent thing.
Here's the thing, is like, even by the end of the movie, I don't think the stepmom's evil.
No, but in the folktale she is for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so... and then there's also three of her own kids in the storyline that are... It's you know what? It's a good tale about paying for your bullshit.
All
That's
right.
what it is.
So it's karma.
Like, karma. It's very karmic. Yeah.
Okay, very, very cool. So this film was directed, again, like I said, by Kim Ji-woon, produced by Oh Jang-won and Oh Ki-min.
She's going to do all the pronunciations, guys. All of them.
I'm very familiar, at least at the very minimum, with Korean names. It was written by Kim Ji-woon, again, the music by Lee Byung-woo, and cinematography by Lee Mo-gay.
That would have took me 4 minutes.
Really? No, it's fine. The film is starring Im Soo-young, Moon Gyeong-young, Yum Young Ah, and Kim Kap-soo.
Kim Kap-soo? I can say that one. That's well, good.
here it says the film was released on June 13th, 2003, and I believe that is in Korea.
Okay,
that makes sense. Was, but on my computer screen over here, it says that it actually was released probably in America on December 17th, 2003. So we have about a 6-month gap between its South Korean release and its American release.
Okay.
So, this was a Christmas film.
Christmas, guys. Yay. Woo.
So before we kind of delve into the breakdown about the film, because we talked a little bit about the film, but I also wanted to give everyone a sort of rudimentary breakdown about Asian ghosts and the difference specifically with Korean ghosts and Asian horror in comparison to what we see today, because that's going to come in later, because as some of you may or may not know, this movie has an American remake.
I actually did not know that. I knew that it was, well, I guess, remade, but I didn't know which movie it was.
Yeah. So I didn't know this until my friend, who, hi, Drea, gave me a shit ton of reading about this movie. I read one of them because I have no time, and I'm going to read them eventually, but it was a lot of information because she took an Asian horror, or specifically, I believe, a Korean film or a Korean horror film class in college.
Okay. So she has the sources.
She was able to help me out, for sure. So I could not have done this without her, and then she gave me a lot of the sources that I am going to regurgitate at you.
Okay. You got that? Regurgitation is also a scene in the film, so let's hope it's not as bad as that one.
Am I not remembering the entire movie?
When the son comes back with his wife, and she's
yes, I do remember that.
Well, probably the most traumatic scene of the film, I would imagine.
It's true. I was eating soup while I was watching that.
I was eating when I was watching it too. I was like, yeah, it's not gonna be that fucking bad. And then I was like, stop, don't swallow, don't fucking do it.
But yeah, so I wanted to, before we go into that kind of discussion, I wanted to actually talk to Anthony about his experiences with Asian horror, because I personally love it. So I wanted to get some of your insight on it before we
delve in.
Dive right in. So right off top, what kind of experiences do you have with Asian horror?
I remember the initial American, like, surge of, like, we're gonna do The Grudge and The Ring and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't say hated those films. But what ended up happening is on, I think, one of those, like, cable TV channels, like IFC or something, where they're, like, allowed to play everything uncut. They had Ju on.
Okay.
And I watched that, and I was like, oh, this is way better.
Yeah.
Well, it was fucked up. It's one of those things that I realized that American versions of these films are very on the nose.
Yeah.
Very grim, dark, and like, look how creepy this is, and we're gonna just hold your hand through why you should be scared.
Yeah.
And then Ju-on was very much like, this is gonna look like a normal fucking movie, and the scares are going to come from this really otherworldly entity.
Yeah.
Fucking everything up for everybody.
What are your thoughts on Ju-on? Because I remember, like, the vignette type style almost of Ju-on, and how it cuts through time, though very similar, in a very similar vein as The Tale of Two Sisters. It drove me up the fucking wall. Like, I did not like Ju-on.
It was hard to follow.
Yeah, it's super hard to follow. It's also like, I am the type of person who has the attention span of maybe a 3-year-old. So giving it my undivided attention for an hour and a half was really, well, 45 minutes was really difficult, because, like, I can't, like, look at my phone or listen to what's going on while I'm taking notes, because it's in Korean and I have to be able to read the subtitles, which, once again, is just making me want to learn Korean. So,
I don't know. Like, I liked it, but then when it comes, I have kind of the opposite problem. I have a hyper-focus where everything else just kind of gets lost around me. With the, not just movies, but with, like, most things. So where it's kind of a problem where I feel like I'm not socializing. Like, oh, I didn't mean to ignore you. I'm just focused on that thing over there.
Oh, yeah, that happens. It happens to me, too. There's there's very little middle ground for me with that. But, no, I get that.
But in terms of Ju-on, I just remember it being just very different from the kind of stuff that I saw before, because this is before me really getting deep into, I was just starting to, like, I saw stuff like Punch Drunk Love and things like that, which taught me that films could be more than entertainment pieces. They're like profound.
Yeah.
And then to see this it's like a culturally different way of presenting a story, yeah. Which to me, I was like, oh, this is all new and right. A little ambiguous and a little...
From an American lens, it's very artsy.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. So I did enjoy it, though. Liked it.
The very final scene, which I think you know, I'm not sure if you know what I'm talking about, but there's this very final scene where basically the camera is zooming in onto this girl's face, and the very last scene is her eyes opening.
I think I remember that, actually.
Yes, so that scene has stuck with me for a very long time, for God knows why, because it's not very scary, but it's so effective, and it's timed so well that I'm just like, ugh.
You know what? That's actually a really good way of putting it. These films don't scare me, but they're so well made and so grabbing. They just grab you.
Yeah, well, they're unsettling.
Unsettling. Unsettling is probably the most for me. There.
Because, and we talk about this later, about the usage of time and how, because it's not a linear storyline, it makes me anxious.
Yeah, it keeps my attention because of that, though. Because I have to, you know, there's a lot of moments in these kind of films where I'm like, what the fuck? After a scene? And then it's answered, like, maybe four scenes later. But then it has another question where I'm like, okay, just let me know. But this one had such a good way of putting the bow on everything where I was like, oh, that was all worth it right there.
Yeah, that's true. So follow-up question, are you able to differentiate between Korean, Japanese, or pan horror? And by pan horror, I mean it has, it is in general an Asian horror film, but has, is worked on from a variety of East Asian influences. So for example, The Eye. If you've seen the original The Eye, it's a very, not obvious, but it is a pan-Asian film, meaning that it has several influences, and it's like written by like someone who's Chinese, or it's directed by someone who's Japanese, or it's,
yeah,
you know,
it's multicultural.
Yes. But it's still Asian. Yes. So that would be an example. But since you haven't seen The Eye, the original one, not the one with Jessica Alba,
I haven't seen that one either. Oh, sorry, Jessica. I'm fucked up. Right now.
No, I wanted to see The Eye more than anything in middle school. And my mom was like, I really wanted to see it. I don't know why. I was obsessed. I'm like, this movie looks so good. I need to see it. And my mom was just like, you're 12. No.
I did really like Jessica Alba. So I remember the TV spots. And I'm like, I could watch it. Or there's other movies with Jessica Alba, I guess. I just watched Idle Hands. Which is very different from these films.
Or like Sin City.
Oh, that's another good one, too. Yeah. I like Idle Hands more, though.
I've never seen it.
It's a, not horror, but it has zombies and horror themes. Zombies, are they? I don't know. This is the opposite type of movie that we're... This is a film theory discussion. There's no theory in Idle Hands at all. It is schlock.
Wow. All right. So, but basically, are you able to discern between them? Like, if you were to watch Ju-on, and then if you were to watch A Tale of Two Sisters... Can you see a thematic or a creative difference between the two from a Japanese or a Korean perspective?
Well, I would say yes, but only because Korean films themselves have a very distinctive way overall, in terms of from Japanese cinema that I've noticed. Because I've seen movies like I Saw the Devil, Man from Nowhere, things like that, where it's very... Korean films are slick. They're slick as... Even this one, made in 2003, I'm like, dude, this guy knows how to make a fucking film. They're probably a little more Western feeling than the Japanese films to me.
Yes. Parts of this movie felt very Western.
Yes. I mean, the narrative of this film was straight.
Yeah.
Felt like that. Like, it's just an Asian story, you know? But it's Korean films to me are just so freaking well made. And Japanese films, I mean, they're still obviously very, very well made, but they're not structured like a Western film too much.
I can see that.
Yeah, from what I can tell. But my very limited knowledge of these two types of films in the horror genre.
Right. Because
I'm not, I don't seek these out as much because just lack of access, I guess, you know?
I watch what I can. I also... Pretty much a lot of my time is taken up by this podcast, so I don't have a lot of free time to watch horror leisurely anymore. Oh,
yeah. But from having written 9 episodes in a row, I can tell you, yes.
Yeah, time is, for sure.
I'm enjoying my somewhat more time now.
Oh, are you enjoying the switch off?
Sometimes, yes.
Well, because, you know, you'll just get real ahead. Like, you'll just be like, here's some photos for 3 weeks ahead, or like, here's, you know.
I already did January's, too.
Really?
Just the first week.
Anthony.
But I'm not satisfied with it yet. So, you know, we still got a
little
bit. Is
that why
you
haven't seen it yet?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Anyway, so what the fuck was up with all these American remakes of Japanese and Korean horror films in the early 2000s? Because we've named about 7 right off the bat.
That's the thing, though. They're too, like, spoon-fed. They really are. And it makes for, like, one of those things where you're satisfying no one.
Mm-hmm.
I know The Ring itself was a hit, and
yes,
like
technically
it was like, yeah, it was a total hit, and like everything kind of tried to, it did the American thing where they tend to like, okay, that worked, let's try to copy it almost exactly but with other properties that are a little like it.
Well, yeah, because, and also I just don't understand what the fuck was, well, I mean, I understand what the fuck was up because America is America, but taking these stories that inherently are so rooted in Asian culture and just being like, nope, we're gonna take that from you and we're gonna make it, you know, like
we're gonna put a blonde protagonist in there,
you know, or the fact that, like, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar is in The Grudge, like that kind of shit, or like The Ring, which is like, it's a completely,
no, Naomi Watts is in that one, right?
Yes, but it's a completely different story in terms of like The Ring and Ringu are the is the prime example for me, because The Ring makes the characters out to be bad guys versus Ringu, it's a lot more of a drama than it is a horror film, because ghosts also, and I'll talk about this later, play a huge part in drama as well, because their whole idea is tied into this concept of unfinished business.
Yeah, I think with the, and then, you know, just a quick aside, I love America, folks, but sometimes we bastardize shit like a motherfucker.
Precisely. Like, that's what I'm saying, is, like, taking these films that inherently are so deep-rooted in Asian culture or have, you know, distinct storylines that shift if you put them through an American lens, I guess.
Well, I mean, they make strides to ground them.
Yeah.
They just do. Like, we were talking about, what was the movie? I forget already. But you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, American films... Oh, it was even with last week's Child's Play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the original script was something a little more free-flowing, and Talking Tina's a lot more like, you know, whatever. Like, you were able to have mystery there. But then when you get to, like, a major studio, they're like, you need to explain everything.
Yeah.
Because people are going to be stupid.
Yeah.
And that is definitely something that happens with these early 2000 remakes.
Like, yeah, that's a huge thing with, like, I think... Yeah, remakes of American, like, American remakes of foreign horror.
And I used to be one of those guys that was like, hey, we're not stupid. You don't have to do that. And then fucking election happened. Oh, you know what? We're fucking idiots. It's fine. That's fine.
Just spell it out for us. That's totally
go ahead.
Cool.
Spell, you're not doing it enough, because clearly some shit is happening.
Getting lost in translation. Yes. So, a follow-up. What did you watch first growing up? Did you watch American remakes of Asian horror, or did you watch the original Asian horror?
Definitely the America remakes, although I didn't enjoy them.
Okay.
So it kind of, I wouldn't say hampered it, but it was one of those things where it made me kind of not pursue. And then
sense.
Then again, of course, I've watched some here and there, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's actual, you know what it is? It's the skill level's different, because you can tell there's a lot of hands in the American one to, like, make it a functional film. Where these ones are almost, Eastern films are a lot more like auteur, or they're very much like, they have more of an identity, which the American films lack. They're all the same identity. They're all The Ring.
Yeah.
Try to capture that fucking lightning in a bottle a few times. Yeah.
So, yeah. So a follow-up to the follow-up, and you already kind of answered this, which do you find yourself liking more now that you're seeing both?
I've always liked the Asian cinema more when it comes to those types of stories. Mm-hmm. Because I just don't think we do those stories. We do stabby stories awesomely. I love the stabby. And shit like Hereditary or whatever. You know, where,
like, the cerebral type.
Yeah, I mean, stuff that's firmly rooted in things that we created. Like exorcisms and rituals and things like that have an American basis in horror.
Arguably exorcisms did not, but...
No. I mean, in terms of entertainment wise.
In terms of... Would you say, okay, I can see that.
I mean, like, in terms of, like, the hit.
I would say, like, The Exorcist and, like, The Omen and stuff, in terms of, like, possession and, like, creepy Catholic horror.
Well, yeah, it's those things that got big enough to set a foundation in their own ways.
Yeah, no, okay, yeah. I can see that. No, mm-hmm. I retract my statement. I got you. So, for this episode, well, that's it for the questions, in case, unless you have anything else.
America still rules. Oh my gosh. Just so you know, all right? Number one, guys, you know, I'm a Mexican. Don't deport me. I've never been there.
Great. Thank you for that caveat. Meanwhile, I'm just angry at America all the time. So that's pretty much it for just, like, questions to sort of, like, keep in mind in terms of our experience with Asian horror and what, you know, that has been for us.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I actually watched The Ring in high school because this was back when Netflix or Hulu was free.
Oh, you had that in high school? God damn. We're older. We're different. That's I didn't discover that until later on.
So there are, I was a freshman in high school. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. No, that's early enough. That makes sense.
Yeah, I was taking geometry and we had to write down all of our like formulas and everything. And mm-hmm. I was making flashcards and I was watching horror films while I was doing it because I had nothing else better to do, I guess. And I watched The Ring, and I remember sitting there thinking, like, why would my mom not let me watch this movie? This is not scary mm-hmm. at all. Like, it's good, and I liked it, but I was just like, this isn't scary. It was also in the middle of the day.
Yeah, that.
So I think that might have messed with the ambiance of the film, but I was just like, this is kind of gross. And, like, it also, early 2000s, that fucking green filter on everything.
Dude, no. You know what?
The blue, green, yellows, like, from, like, Saw and from The Ring and, like, from all... the
Poughkeepsie tapes.
And the Poughkeepsie tapes. But, yeah, all of that, like, I just, like, or The Descent, like, yeah. Just that fucking filter. It was just so popular in the early 2000s. Fucking holy
studios,
shit.
Man. Studios, they're yeah. just like, it works. Don't change it. It works. Oh, that works too. Let's do that now.
Yeah. So, so that's pretty much my experience growing up. And then once I hit college, I started watching the actual films. So I actually have never seen The Grudge, but I have seen Ju-on.
Okay. I think I've seen
scenes of The Grudge, but I mm-hmm. haven't seen a whole lot.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, A Tale of Two Sisters now, obviously, but, like, some of those remakes. I haven't seen its American counterpart, which we will discuss later.
Okay, so real quick personal story. I remember, we got to the point where these movies kept coming out
mm-hmm.
when The Uninvited
mm-hmm.
finally fucking came out. All me and my friends can do was, like, make fun of the trailers.
Oh,
like,
no.
Nonstop. We'd be like, what the hell are they gonna do now? A fucking... baby that got aborted is coming back. Ooh, the Unborn. Ooh.
Oh, I remember shit the like Unborn.
That.
Yeah.
Wait, is that a real movie?
The Unborn, yeah.
Oh, we made that up as a joke.
No. The Unborn is like an actual early 2000s movie where this girl basically had a twin, but the twin died.
Uh-huh.
And the twin came, like, the twin, she's haunted by, like, it's a ghost baby, like...
That's exactly the stupid shit that... Oh, my God.
You might have actually seen it and forgot you watched it because it was so stupid.
No, we literally were like... We brainstormed the stupidest thing we could think about.
I swear to Christ, it's true.
We did. No, we honestly, like, in a car ride home coming back from, like, getting Korean barbecue or some shit. Like, we were just like, dude, did you hear that fucking trailer? The Uninvited was the catalyst because we're like... It kind of has Elizabeth Banks, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one where we're just like, that was the stupidest shit for a trailer I've ever seen. How low can they go? And then we made that fucking story up that you just told me without the twin, just with the ghost baby.
Uh-huh.
Of God.
Well, yeah, because ghost children are also like their own trope in and of itself because no one likes dead children and no one likes ghosts. So when you combine it, it's two things that people really don't like.
It's just, it's crying and we can't silence it. No.
Yeah.
Fuck.
But
God, that's hilarious.
That's funny. Oh, wow.
The Unborn, okay.
That's an actual movie. I'm going to show you the trailer later.
Oh my god, please, yeah. I need to...
So...
Wow.
So, let's dive right in, shall we?
Okay, guys, the history section of this...
Before you dive into the production, I do want to say up top, for this episode, I read a chapter on A Tale of Two Sisters from this book called Translating Time, Cinema, the Fantastic, and Temporal Critique by Bliss Kua Lim. There's gonna be a lot of that. Yes. I'm sorry. Ahead of time.
I'd read the article prior, and that's just my reaction to the article. It's okay.
Whatever. You wanted to read it.
I did. I know. I understand. We had this discussion earlier. When it comes to film theory, I like film theory and what it presents. I hate film theorists.
Yes.
That's my stance, guys.
We are in a very anti-Ivory Tower podcast.
Seriously, no. Oh my gosh. Which you'll find out when she reads that quote. It's going to be wonderful.
Thank you.
Ah, okay. But
take us there. Go.
As a quick aside, this is literally going to be like a minute.
Not a lot on the production, casting, post-production, and like there's not a lot.
Okay. See? But with that, guys, hot minute take here. Director.
Okay. Okay, so here's the thing. I took from IMDb.
Okay.
Just straight up. I took from IMDb because there's nothing. So for some reason, okay, so in Korea, mm-hmm. your last name is first. And then it's your first name. When they write it with romantic letters,
mm-hmm.
They do the hyphen because the first name is separated by syllables. So this says Jiwoon Kim, but it should be Kim Jiwoon.
Okay.
And it's read like one word. I did not change this. I'm sorry. I totally meant to.
No, it's
okay. Director Kim Jiwoon initially wanted Jun Ji Hyun.
Okay, let me try to repeat that, guys. Director Kim Ji-woon originally wanted Jun Ji-hyun.
Yeah.
Popular actress in South Korea, stars in the highest grossing South Korean comedy ever. I don't know what it is, but it's the highest fucking grossing one. To play Sumi. However, Jun refused the role of Sumi because she thought the script was too goddamn scary.
Yes.
I had the goddamn IMDb. I am sorry. I'm fucking up your notes. It's okay.
I didn't write down the name because I didn't think it was relevant, but apparently it was relevant.
You know me. I like to have every little bit there.
Yeah.
When the film was originally released, it became both the highest grossing Korean horror film of all time and the first one to be screened in American theaters. I remember reading that fact. I was like, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Because otherwise, I mean...
Yeah, it was good.
It's a gem. It's a fucking gem. I'm glad more Korean cinema made its way over
mm-hmm.
because Korean films are fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the antagonistic roles they play with each other in the film as stepmother and stepdaughter.
Yoon Jung-ha.
I thought you flipped around.
This one I did.
With me. How? I played by the rules you set 3 minutes ago, and you just throw this at me.
This is English in a nutshell.
Okay.
No, I'm so sorry. I spotted their names, but I did not see the names up top, which is why I had that caveat. So it's Yoon Jung-ha and Lim Soo-young.
We're professionals, guys. You got that? All right? We're fucking professionals. Despite the antagonistic roles they play with each other in the film as stepmother and stepdaughter, Yoon Jung-ha and Lim Soo-young became close friends on the set of the film.
Yeah, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
But also, like, it totally makes sense. But also, they look significantly older.
There's a pretty big gap. Yeah.
So that's it for the production, casting, and post production.
That's it, guys. Real clean shoot. People became friends, and somebody was too much of a bitch to play the part.
She's actually a really popular actress. I just think she was just not into it.
I didn't mean bitch like in a mean way. In terms of just scaredy cat.
See.
Yeah. If I say it the mean way, it'd be bitch.
is that how you? Wow. Are you in the early 2000s?
Yes.
Are you stuck there?
Well, sometimes. That's where I came of age.
Okay, so that's pretty much it. Do you want to take us through some of the brief into Asian horror?
Okay, guys, let's get a little overview here of what some Asian horror stuff is. Just some more bases here for you guys. So Ringu, The Grudge.
A Tale of Two Sisters.
Acronyms.
I shortened it to ATOTS.
Yeah,
which is how I say it in my head because I've had to type out A Tale of Two Sisters about 70 million times.
Yeah, it's guys, just make your names shorter.
No, well, the original name for the film was very short. I don't know why they changed it to A Tale of Two Sisters.
America, Alex, you know how this goes.
So, as you might have noticed, Asian horror has a different set of what is and isn't considered quote-unquote scary. In this case, The Korean traditional ghost differs from what a ghost would traditionally look like in America. So there's immediate cultural differences.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I actually like that. You know, there's, they actually, that's the one thing about Asian horror I love is that the ghosts themselves are distinctive.
Yeah.
Like, they're very distinctive.
Versus, and all, many cultures have this, where they have, like, their idea of what a ghost looks like. And which is something that actually really fascinates me about specifically Korean horror, is they have a specific, dead true lore surrounding what ghosts are and aren't. In America, ghosts can be anything from, you know, loved ones to demons to
bed sheets with eye holes in them.
To someone in a mask. Like, there's a lot to work with in terms of what a ghost is or isn't.
Yes, whatever's making the most money in theaters at the time is what the ghost will be for four movies. That's the American rule there.
Definitely. So
Kuisen are simply the spirit of someone who has died. There isn't anything else supernatural related. That is to say that they aren't monsters or demons or anything like that. Kuisen are simply there.
Yes. So I had to write the pronunciation of this for Anthony.
She did a good job.
because it's Korean to English, like, kind of retranslating is very, very tricky. And there's a lot of rules. But something that is interesting about Kuisen is that, and this is also, I forgot to mention up top, Kuisen are the traditional ghosts of South Korea. So these are ghosts that are, like you said, just the representations or the souls of people who have died.
Yeah.
Just people. Nothing.
There's no paranormal activity shit where it's just like, and this is the demon that's been around since fucking forever. And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. They can mainly be found, and this is interesting, in abandoned buildings, houses, cemeteries, forests, and schools. And the longer they stay on Earth, the stronger they become. The schools thing is important because I talk about this later.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting, actually.
Mm-hmm. So,
Kuisen remain on Earth when they have unfinished business or a message to deliver to a loved one. One might say that they're trying to complete a fetch quest in the afterlife, which that's actually pretty cool. They're like, oh, fuck, that's a lot of NPCs. I'm going to scare the shit out of half of them.
Yeah. Basically, that's what they're doing. They have a message or they have, you know, a task that they need to complete.
Some unfinished fucking business. Oh, that's cool. And you know what? Within the context of this film, guys, yeah, that's totally
what's happening.
Yeah, the rules are very strictly adhered to, which is nice.
Yes.
It makes for a good narrative push, honestly.
Yeah. Kuisen are characterized and are easily identifiable as most people, you know what a Kuisen looks like, but you don't have the name for it. It is the very, not stereotypical, but the well-known, identifiable long black hair, translucent white skin. Either they have no face or it's like hidden behind said black hair, and they float, or like they don't have legs, which is very common in Asian horror, and we see this again and again. This archetype of Japanese and Korean ghosts is what we've grown to know and love today and to expect, frankly, from Japanese and Korean films.
And it's another one of those things where it's like the American versions of these things had the aesthetics kind of down, but it was little Hollywood, you know?
Yeah.
A little too much. Mm-hmm. Or when I watched The Ring or whatever.
It was too gratuitous, but also like this is how they do it is different, and I can't quite put my finger on why it's different, but it's totally different.
It's like a manufactured scary. Like, they're like, okay, but they still gotta be super fucking scary to the point of like absurdity.
Yeah, where, it's like Barbie's dream house versus like Surfer Babe's getaway. A tradition, like the iconic or whatever, like the, I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this that makes sense to you. Like,
Barbie reference, I get it.
No, I mean that there's something, like there's the brand and then there's the off-brand.
Oh, yes. That's precise. It's the Oreos and then everything else.
Yes.
It's one of those things, too, where we're looking back right now in this fucking thought that I had right now. Look, like the ghost, say, in this film underneath underneath the suyun, underneath the kitchen, the sink.
Yeah.
The way that her flesh looked Now, in a American film, that would be very, very obviously high definition fucking flesh or whatever it is. And like it looks almost like just fake.
Yeah.
But in that one, it looks so organically like some fucked up entity.
I had to pause it and go back because I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, but like the red on the arm mm-hmm. and the skin blackened, like coming off like that. Like mm-hmm. the way it's done is artful.
Yes.
It's artful compared to commercial.
That is a great way to put it. Yes, precisely. So, in 1998, Whispering Corridors took Kuisen to the modern era by creating a culture surrounding high school hauntings, which would continue to follow the franchise through four sequels that share either characters or a continuing plot. I haven't watched all of this series, but I have, I mentioned it up top, there's a film in this series called Memento Mori. Mm-hmm. It is fucking awesome. The storytelling is great. The characters are great. It tells a very realistic story about high school mm-hmm. while also playing with our idea of time. And it's very in the same vein of A Tale of Two Sisters.
Okay, I can dig that because even reading that, I'm like, oh, a high school haunting actually sounds like a really fucking cool concept.
It's and also at the time, because I want to say Memento Mori, very, very late 90s, like 99 or 2000, like early 2000s. So mm-hmm. I want to say between 99 and like 02, maybe.
Okay.
Is my estimate.
Man, so once they kicked off, they just kept coming at us, huh?
Yeah, and they just like, but Memento Mori is the second of that series. Whispering Corridors is the first one.
Oh, I see.
Which was in 1998, mm-hmm. so I think. Is that what I said?
You did, yeah, 98, that's yeah. in there. That so. People can listen, so yes, it's right there.
So, yeah. So, that's sort of my own little side note about that. It's a really good movie.
I would love to, like, have... I don't know if any of these exist, but, like, American high school haunting. Like, just the difference in values between both. It would be, like, people having sex and, like, a ghost, like, fucking with them. Like, things like that.
No, I don't know. I feel like... I'm sure there is, and I'm sure someone will be, like, at us about it later, but, yeah, I'm sure it exists.
Yeah.
But it's not...
They're mostly slashers, though, you know?
Yeah, well, I think that's what it is. Like, mm-hmm. our ghosts are slashers. Our ghosts are human.
Yeah. It's always an attempt at making some kind of, like, iconography, I guess.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
So, well, I mean, that's where we get our, you know, our slasher rules about sex equaling death and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah. So, something else that I kind of wanted to dive into is... the use of music or lack thereof in Asian horror. Because, so basically, the ghost archetype and music are the two things that when I think about Asian horror, those are the things that I go to.
Mm-hmm.
Music is used so sparingly or in the scenes that we wouldn't expect in Asian horror that it really throws me off, but in a good way.
Yeah.
So the most tense scenes in movies, usually, especially in American cinema, it's when you get the fucking orchestra and the violins and the, you know, all of that.
Yeah,
versus in Asian horror, you get those sorts of pieces in the beginning or the end.
Mm-hmm.
While in the middle, when the really intense scenes, it plays on the silence. Which I think we need to do more in American horror because the music is getting to be a lot.
Hereditary, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, Hereditary.
See, I keep describing my perfect horror film.
And it's always fucking Hereditary, dude.
I need to
yeah.
watch it. I just know, and everyone keeps saying I love it, but I just know that it's going to make me not, like, just want to hide for a couple days.
Yeah, no, that's true. It will. It totally will. Yeah, it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
But it does a lot of these lessons that I feel like a lot of... it's very auteur compared to American horror, which I feel... most of the time is assembly line
mm-hmm.
unless you get like a Don Mancini or a Sam Raimi or somebody like that who has a very distinctive style yeah. like that, or John Carpenter, of course. Mm-hmm. Everything else is, I don't know,
yeah,
catching up to the big dogs.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know, there's not a cultural consistency, I guess. I mean, there is, but
there is and there isn't.
Yeah,
because like we follow a general line, so to speak, for horror. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in other countries it's based in such like in like a more concrete culture,
a less commercial yeah. way of approaching it, for sure.
Like, yeah,
we gotta make money, son. All right, we gotta get all those asses in fucking seats.
Right
And no music, are you kidding me? No, we're putting in all the ring scenes right there.
How could I forget? Okay, so something that is also really integral to Asian horror is the usage of time. And we've been talking about this pretty much the entire episode, but I did really want to do a bit of a deeper dive onto what time in reference to this film, why it was so effective, and honestly, what made it so scary at times.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so Korean and Japanese horror has this thing with playing with perspective and time that I absolutely adore, in the sense that we really have to work for the plot, and we're pretty much guaranteed to have questions until the last possible second.
I fucking love this, honestly.
It's so cool, and the way that they're able to leave you little, like, bits and pieces about, like, what's gonna happen, and then you get to the end, and it wrapped it all in this beautiful fucking bow, and it's just like, here is this movie.
I wouldn't call it a beautiful bow. I'd call it a fucking terrifying bow. But
I mean, beautiful to some, terrifying to others.
Or like, it's you know what? It's a good formula for fucking your mind.
Yeah,
it really
that's
is.
That's what I enjoy so much, is like, it's very like mental, and that's what I kind of enjoy, is that you're able to freak me out and get under my skin without the same type of plot devices used in American cinema.
Well, it makes you more engaged.
Yeah.
As opposed to American cinema. Read shit and go on Reddit while I'm watching The Grudge and not miss shit.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
I can't do that for this fucking movie.
Right. Exactly. There's no way. There were a couple times where I was like looking down at my phone, and because DJ joined for like the second half of the movie, and DJ was just like, pay attention, put your phone down. And I was just like, I'm sorry.
I actually had to put mine down and like be like, no, because I missed one thing and I had to actually go back, and I'm like, oh, fuck this. I gotta look. This is not going to work.
It needs my undivided attention. But we can easily split up the storytelling in this particular film via diegetic and extra diegetic elements. Diegetic elements, and this is where I go into film theory mode. I am sorry.
No, I'm just not fucking with you.
Drink your fucking coffee. Yeah. Diegetic elements are part of the fictional world, so you can think of this as part of the story, as opposed to extra or non-diegetic elements, which are stylistic elements of how the narrator tells the story, so part of the storytelling.
Yeah.
So this is where we get the perspective difference in the film. That doesn't really come in until probably around the second half of the film, because for the most part, it's entirely through Sumi's perspective. More or less. We get some parts from Suyeon's perspective, but it's not as common as Sumi's.
I mean, and it's also, like, still Sumi.
Right. Well, exactly. But that's the part of what makes it different, is because we're seeing it mainly from her perspective, it sets us up to believe her version of events to be true.
Oh, I love the way it just strings you along in that sense. Like, it really does that very well. And we have the answers right now, but as watching this, you don't have these fucking answers. Yeah. Which, again, if you haven't seen this movie, it's on Shudder. I'm sure you can bootleg it. Or, you know, we don't endorse it. You give the creators money. But there, you should watch it, because it's pretty fucking fascinating. Just don't be on your phone.
Yeah, let's see, what can you do in an hour and 45 minutes? Do a load of laundry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Just, like, find something where you do not need to be in front of a screen except for a movie, TV screen, or whatever, for an hour and 45 minutes, and watch the movie, because it deserves your undivided attention.
Absolutely.
But yeah. So, another huge tool in terms of this film is ambiguity. Any movie that goes all wonky with the timeline has to leave some things up to the imagination. For example, I spent a good 20 minutes not sure if Sumi had killed her sister or not, because we're following her perceptions of events where she felt horribly guilty for her sister's death, that in her mind, she might as well have killed her sister herself. So this ambiguity, and sort of that where it starts playing with time, kind of makes it so you're just like, huh? The whole time.
Yeah.
And it demands your attention.
Actually, that's good, because huh was a sensation that I had for a lot of the actual, like, trying to give you information scenes. Because, again, they don't give you everything, and they leave more questions open after the end of scenes.
Right. And that's what makes you nervous, which is why I'm going to read... This is what I read for 9 pages, y'all.
Yes, guys. So I've read 2, but not a lot of it took. But I believe in most of you.
This is what I'm here for.
Yes.
So this is a quote directly from the text by Lim. Cinematic ambiguity is also accomplished via temporal confusion because the chronological position of flashbacks are not clearly demarcated. Spectators are unsure of the temporal register of depicted events.
Okay, let me do that with my pretentious academic voice.
Oh, please, go for it.
Class, cinematic ambiguity is also accomplished via the temporal confusion because the chronological position of flashbacks are not clearly demarcated. Spectators are unsure of the temporal register of depicted events. Do not fall asleep in my class, young lady. You went to the A.
Now, for those of us who didn't get a degree in film theory or media and cultural studies, Lim was saying this: ambiguity makes us nervous when we see it through the lens of time. When we see a scene and we don't know what time it takes place in, we're immediately trying to put it all together on a linear timeline.
You did not use the word demarcated. I don't understand what you are doing.
So this is why I love film theory, because I love the concepts they're trying to explain. I just hate the academic bullshit that it's like spewed through. Yes. Like, it's so inaccessible.
And it really is like good information. But it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, my pinky's up my ass right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we like a movie that has a beginning, middle, and end. And I, when I say we, I'm referring to Americans.
Yes.
Because these are the movies that we've grown up with.
I mean, the narrative has been beaten into us. Three-act structure. You know?
Yes, exactly.
We can't control it.
We did little worksheets in like fifth grade where we were taught that a story has an introduction, a beginning, a climax, and a conclusion.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, stories don't have to have shit. Yeah. They gotta just tell a story.
Yeah, exactly. They need to tell a story. We do the same with movies so that when they deviate from that norm, it leaves us feeling unsettled, confused, or anxious, trying to find an answer for what we're looking for. Mm. And this is why this movie is so effective, is because it leaves us, you know, we're literally, like, we do not get any solid answers for this movie until the last 20 minutes.
Oh, my God. See, and I just, again, I'm going to keep gushing every time because, man, it was worth it for those last fucking 20 minutes.
Those last 20 minutes are, yeah, I mean, it's an amazing, like, how, I just, the way that the movie was, I'm, like, speechless. Mm-hmm. The way that the movie was able to give us so much information throughout the film, but have none of it make any fucking sense until the last 20 minutes was, it's a talent.
And it makes sense in all the worst ways.
Yeah, totally,
all the
totally.
Worst fucking ways. People pay for their fucking mistakes.
Yes.
Which is a sign of a good movie.
Oh, totally. I mean, and, you know, unless you're, you know, like, I don't know, Lars von Trier or something, making a movie that just makes you feel shitty.
Yeah. Ooh, fucking art. Like, you know, Lars von Trier would fucking say that sentence perfect. we are still gonna watch The House That Jack Built.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. we're gonna give him money, guys. We're fucking sorry.
By the time this episode's gonna come out, it's already going to be out, so we might have already seen it.
Okay, well, we'll tell you exactly how horrified we are in a few weeks.
Yeah. So these are the, bringing it back, these are the types of movies that you need to watch more than once, because, and this is from another book that I read in undergrad, and I don't remember the name of it, and I'm so sorry to whatever academic gods are listening, but it's a rewind moment where once something happens, so once we start getting through that last 20 minutes of the film and things start getting revealed to us, we kind of, in our own brains, subconsciously or not, have this moment where we reprocess all the previous information that we received from the movie through the lens of that new information. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. That's actually what I went through
this fucking movie. An example of this, and it's a shitty fucking example, but did you ever watch The Crying Game?
No, okay. I've never seen The Crying
Game. So they use this as an example. There's a rewind moment when the character is revealed to be a trans woman.
Yes.
And it's like, that's the rewind moment where you're rewatching up till that point through the lens of like, oh, she's a trans woman.
That's the one with Hilary Swank, right?
No, that's Boys Don't Cry.
Boys Don't Cry, son of a bitch. All right.
See, and I know these to be certain because I watched all of them so many times.
Oh my God.
Because I did film and I did gender and sexuality studies. So when you combine them together, you get those
movies. You get those movies, yeah. Yeah. And stupid fucking Born in Flames.
God. Anyway, so...
one day we're going to do a podcast where we just take 10 minutes just so we can talk shit on that movie.
Just talk mad shit. But yeah, so those are those rewind moments where you have to piece everything together. For more mindfuck movies that mess with your perception of time like this, I recommend Ju-on. I don't know why I put The Grudge here, but Ju-on and Memento Mori.
Okay.
Ju-on is Japanese.
I believe so.
I'm pretty sure. And Memento Mori is another Korean film. So.
Okay. And so, if we're wrong, guys, fuck us, right?
Very astute. Thank you. So now that's pretty much it for my film theory.
We did it, guys.
We made it. You got an A.
Did I? Did I get an A?
You got an A. Congratulations. That's
the first A in fucking film theory I've ever gotten.
You get your A and you're attaboy.
You know what? I actually did take a feminist film theory class in college.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Oh my god.
Well, I mean, that's where I saw Born in Flames.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
And then a bunch of other movies that I actually forgot.
But that one stuck with you because you hated it?
Yes. It was a visceral reaction of just complete, like, dumbfoundery.
Oh no.
But it was a fun class. I liked it.
You enjoyed it?
No, I actually enjoyed it. Yeah, it was cool.
Good. I'm glad. Because I've actually seen some really good films in that, in my feminist film theory classes or in my, like, gender and sexuality study classes.
No, there were actually some really good films. They were just very overshadowed by how much I hated the one that we kept talking about.
That's understandable.
Yes.
No, yeah, that's where I saw, like, because I watched Born in Flames about 7 times. I also watched this movie called Tongues and Tide about 7 times. It's artsy as fuck. I don't think you'd like it.
No?
You might. No, you wouldn't like it. And then another one called The Celluloid Closet, which is about the Hays Code, which is why I know so fucking much about the Hays Code.
I love the name, The Celluloid Closet.
Well, yeah.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. But it's about, like, how being gay was basically outlawed in film for a period of time. And it's really cool. It's an interesting bit, but...
I mean, it was basically outlawed until very recently.
Yeah, so, but yeah, so, anyway, so now that we've made it through our film theory of sorts section, congratulations, you all got an A, Anthony got his A, he's very proud, and he got his attaboy, so.
Yay, you gotta write it down so I can push it up somewhere in my room, next to the perfect blue poster.
Just
on a poster.
Piece of paper, yeah. Just like Anthony
right
Fuentes,
fucking here.
A.
Yes.
No. So now we're gonna go into some noteworthy movie moments that stuck out to me. Now, I'm pretty much the only one who wrote these down, but I would love it if Anthony had particular scenes that you...
Oh, there are scenes.
That stuck out to you. Because apparently the seizure scene really got to you.
Yes. Well, choking scares me.
Ah.
So to see that happen, and then to see, like...
The ghost and everything?
The ghost was... No. The whole process of seeing that happen to the... daughter-in-law? Was it daughter-in-law character?
Yes.
Sister-in-law,
not daughter-in-law.
No, is it sister-in-law?
Sister-in-law.
Oh, right, sister-in-law, right. I kept thinking daughter-in-law to the father.
No.
Yeah. Sister-in-law. But it was eerie enough with the wife character, quotation marks.
Quote-unquote, quote-unquote, quote-unquote.
Telling the story so frantically to the point where I was, like, captivated by just that. And I don't know where it would go. But then the choking happens.
It was dead silent. And she was screaming. Mm-hmm. And that bothered me. Because there's also a very similar scene later. When, what's her name? Eunju, which is the stepmom.
Stepmom.
Was dragging Soo-yeon into the wardrobe, and Soo-yeon was just screaming bloody murder. Like,
yes.
That scene I was, like, just watching in, like, horrified shock. Ugh. So.
Yeah, no, that's, that, I think I actually felt the same on that one, too. But this one, the acting was just really well done. Like, it just kept getting crazier. It's one of those things where the film itself was very no sound, no this, just kind of pushes you along and then hits you just back to back to back stuff. And then you see the fucking very realistically done artsy ghost that is actually just terrifying.
Yeah. And yeah. No, I agree.
It has everything, though. It has a scene of... You know, something you can look back on and be like, oh, right, that was Sumi.
Mm-hmm.
So her acting in that scenario, you kind of, like, click right there already. You have something very visceral, like the choking and then the reaction to it with the vomit and everything, like the seizuring, which is a very tangible fear. And then you have the supernatural part, which is kind of the basis for the film. So it's all types of its horror encompassed into one fucking scene.
Oh yeah, I can totally see that.
That to me is just, and it's in the middle of the movie. So from there on, it's like, what the fuck else is going to happen?
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. No, I get that. One of the things that stood out to me is the usage of floral patterns and red in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of, I don't know, I think it's just the film theory in me that, mm-hmm. like, it's just like, because, like, the name of the film is Red Lotus, Red fucking something, something.
Flower? Rose flower? Red lotus?
Yeah.
Rose flower, red lotus.
It's not lotus. No, it is. Okay, yeah, it's rose. I was right the first time. Rose flower, red lotus. I am not full of shit. But, you know, the usage of red and the usage of floral patterns was super prevalent, like, right off the get-go to me for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up on it throughout the movie because this movie is either shot through a red lens,
mm-hmm.
or a blue lens.
Yeah, it's very dynamic when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Lots of dynamic color.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, and it fits each tone of the scene, too.
That's what I'm saying, is the red and the blue tones,
mm-hmm.
like, both the color and mood-wise, were used very, very intelligently.
Intelligently, yeah. I would, that's a good word for putting it, yes.
Yeah, and that's something that I really enjoyed. And then, like, even the intro scene. Like, I love intro scenes, like, or I love, like beginning credit mm-hmm. scenes, like, they just always, I'm just like, fuck yes, like, this is telling you everything you need to know about the movie before it even begins.
Yeah, when they can set a mood while doing it,
mm-hmm.
is awesome. It's effective.
So something else that I did want to point out and I thought was interesting to keep in mind, it was something that it was easy for me to keep in mind watching the movie because I'm just pretty familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health is super highly stigmatized in South Korea to the point that many people are taught to basically suffer in silence, and taking medication alone is considered a personal failure. And I definitely wanted to know if you saw, like, any ghosts of that, so to speak, in the film, or if it didn't even occur to you, because, like, the movie, it never outright says that she was coming back from a mental institution. It's very heavily implied, but they never outwardly say it, which, mm-hmm. again, ties into this culture of suffering in silence and just not talking about it.
Oh, that's actually a really, really good point compared to the, when you bring it to the story that this thing's based off of.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stigmatization is the reason why, in that particular story, the daughters die.
In the original.
Die. Yes, that the daughters die.
Because, okay.
So if I remember correctly, what ended up happening in this tale was, and it goes back to the whole things mm-hmm. you don't want to talk about that are underneath kind of that. I should probably pull it up. but I remember that the two sisters were born, and they have a biological mother. And when they're pretty young, the biological mother dies,
mm-hmm.
and the father has to take care of them. The father remarries, and the stepmother, of course, is a crazy bitch. And has three boys, so it's like a really weird Brady Bunch situation. obviously, I can't say it as eloquent as the article that I saw on this. But with that, everybody starts getting older, and the mom, the stepmother, starts abusing the daughters.
Okay.
Because as wealthy as they are, she feels like all the money and everything they have is a birthright to her sons and not to them.
Weird, but all right.
Well, I mean, it's just evil stepmother thing, looking out for her own kind mm-hmm. of stuff, not acknowledging the daughters as, like, her kids. They're just his kids, or basically strangers, some other woman's fucking kids.
I mean, aren't we so glad that we don't have evil step-parents?
Yes, yeah, precisely. But what ends up happening is, if I remember correctly, the daughter's going to get married, and the father wants to do a big wedding for one of the daughters, and the stepmother wants none of that money that she believes is hers to go to the daughter.
Weird, but all right.
So she has one of her sons shave a dead rat and makes it look like an aborted baby and stick it in the, or a miscarriage, and sticks it in her bed. It's a folktale, remember? So.
This is weird as fuck.
Yeah. Well, they go in and see, they discover it.
Okay.
And then.
I can see the elements of this.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
The stepmother basically uses it as a way of saying, like, look at her. She's unclean. She had sex out of wedlock. And all this stigmatization comes at the daughter, and the daughter's trying to explain that that's never happened. But nobody believes it because it's very convincingly done. So the daughter flees because of the societal pressure on her, because the whole town's against her. Because she shouldn't be having sex, you know, before marriage, or fucking apparently. we'd be fucking dead. she goes to a lake.
We'd be shunned.
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely. It's fucking horrible. I'm shunned this fucking week. But what would end up happening was she goes to a lake to kind of, a lake to, like the town lake, to kind of unwind and, like, cry.
Okay.
The stepmother tells the daughter to follow her and make it look like she drowned in an accident. And this drives the other daughter crazy. And I think the other daughter somehow dies as well. But in the process, the son that made that happen got attacked by something and lost a leg and an arm. So he suffered for committing that deed.
Interesting. Yeah. I might have to read this, like, folk tale. It's so interesting.
There's more to it, but there's, like, a whole resolution and everything. Mm-hmm. But the idea of stigmatization being so repressive that death or whatever else it is preferable to even acknowledging it is a big thing in the story. Now, there's justice in that story, just like there's justice in this one. It's actually very similar. So I highly recommend you find this folktale.
Yeah, I know.
It's actually pretty cool.
I'll have to look it up. Which leads me to actually one of the sadder scenes of this movie. Because they're like the ending, the last 20 minutes, because most of the action happens before the last 20 minutes. And then the last 20 minutes, like all the narrative is sort of explaining everything. And it explains it in a very, it's very sad. Like the movie is very dramatic and very sad. So, like, Suyeon's actual death, super sad.
Oh, fuck, dude. That's suffering right there.
Right. So, it's just like, so... Well,
for the audience...
Yeah.
Just so if you want a refresher here, Suyeon's death is her being crushed by, was it a cabinet?
The
closet?
The,
wardrobe?
Wardrobe. Yeah. The wardrobe that she's locked, that Sumi imagines... Suyeon being locked in.
Mm-hmm. What happens is their biological mother kills herself in that closet.
Yes.
And while she's hanging in there, Suyeon discovers her.
And tries to revive her, and in the attempt to do so, pulls the wardrobe on her.
Mm-hmm. And is slowly, slowly crushed to death with her dead mother
right
above her. And just pounds of this fucking furniture thing just... Crushing her. Yeah, pressing her down.
At this point, they're also relatively young, so this is, like, super, like, it's plausible.
Yeah,
it's
she's tiny.
She's tiny. And...
And her hand. Her hand's trying to escape and, like, scratches it to the point of being bloody at the fingertips on the edge of this...
Well, she's desperate.
...wardrobe, yes.
And that's the thing, is, like, and this is basically in the plot, how it explains it, is, Eunju basically hears this and goes to investigate, and she sees this happening and she walks away, and she's gonna go back, but then Sumi is a raging bitch, which rightfully so, because basically she had returned Eunju because she was her mom, she was their mom's
nurse,
like home care nurse, and I guess they had already gotten engaged to be married before the wife had died, which, like, what?
Keeping your pants fucking...
I know. Oh, like, what the fuck? And that's ultimately what made the mom, like, commit suicide. Mm-hmm. And this whole thing, and Sumi is just like, do me a favor and stay out of my life, basically. Mm-hmm. And Eunju is just like, you're going to regret this one day. Mm-hmm. And then she walks away and basically leaves... Suyeon to die.
Yeah, in a very brutal fucking fashion.
Yes. Sumi doesn't even know and doesn't even realize. And this is ultimately what drives her insane.
And it's one of those weird things too, because they all hear the sound. They all hear the thud of something happening.
Yeah.
But everybody's so wrapped up in their own shit, they don't do anything. The only person that does something is the person that has something to gain with them not being alive.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, when films give you, like, a really complex scenario like that and execute it in such a way that makes you, that kind of sticks with you, that's a sign of some really goddamn good filmmaking right there.
No, yeah, I totally agree. In terms, like, this sort of storytelling. It was really interesting, especially for a horror film. The only thing I can really compare it to is if you... It's actually an American film. It's on Netflix. It's called Before I Wake. And in terms of... It's a very similar storyline in terms of it's just really sad. Like, it's tragic.
Hmm.
Before I Wake is the only horror film that has made me cry because it's sad.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta check that out then.
It's all about like processing death and dying, and it's super like emotional, and it involves children, and I have a soft spot for kids, so like I was just like openly weeping, and he's just like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "It's just so sad."
I'm the opposite. I'm getting rid of all these fucking kids in all these films. All right, just I don't care. Take them out.
No, it's super. Yeah, it's a really good movie. I'd highly recommend it, and it's also it tells a good story. Nice. So I would recommend that if you're looking for sad horror.
You know, but... I'm always looking for sad, fucked up shit. That's just...
Are you?
Yeah, all the time.
No.
Perfect Blue.
That's true. You need to... No, you watch comedies. I don't watch comedies. Yeah. I watch sad stuff. I don't watch happy stuff.
I balance it out with comedy. That's how I do it.
I don't.
Which is why I like BoJack Horseman and F is for Family and stuff like that. Because it's sad and comedy in the same show.
I like Disenchantment.
I haven't seen... I only seen the first episode.
I actually kind of like it.
Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, I do love Matt Groening and the Simpsons crew.
Yeah, well, I thought it was Futurama.
They did both. Yeah, Simpsons and Futurama.
See, I like Futurama more than I like Simpsons. But I like Simpsons too, but...
Quick aside, Simpsons in its prime, those writers went to Futurama. So, yeah, you still like... You just like their version when they just kept getting fucking better.
Yeah, no, I do... I like Futurama, I will sit and watch if it's on... But most other like adult animation, mm-hmm. like I'm just like deuces and I leave.
It's because stupid Family Guy fucked it up for everybody.
I don't like Family Guy. I don't like American Dad. Well, American Dad I can kind of tolerate, but Family Guy just annoys me.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so kind of some closing discussion questions about this film. So, what about Asian horror, or this film in general, is so creepy compared to either its American counterpart, The Uninvited, or other American remakes of Asian horror?
Well, I mean, we went through this a little earlier. It's that it's done in a kind of organic way. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't feel forced.
Yeah.
Which a lot of American films are, again, they're grimdark. They're like, hey... This looks scary.
It takes you by the fucking throat, and it's like, this is scary.
Yeah, look at the gray fucking sky and clouds and shit, and how dark her clothes are, and look at the eyeshadow on that monster. Aren't you afraid?
And then this one, that is exactly right. That is so true.
This one, it's just like, no. This is actually going to be a well-shot artsy film with like an underlying drama that drives it, mm-hmm. and not necessarily the scares are ancillary compared to the main driving narrative.
Ancillary. That's a good one.
Yeah, see?
That's a good word.
I just read that fucking quote up there, so yes.
No, I like that.
But the scares are they, I don't know, because they're not so, like, the narrative, when they come in, they're much more effective because you still got to get back to the drama, but now you have another thing in the equation that you have to worry about, and it doesn't give you answers per scene. So that's just another factor to take into account until the ending wraps most of these things up in all these stories, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's just better made because it's organic. It's an Eastern style storytelling in an Eastern subject, and it's done well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where American, it's not.
Okay, well, what about a rewatch? Like, do you feel like you would benefit from rewatching this film again?
Absolutely. Hell yeah. Oh no, I totally. I'd probably watch it again too if it's
right. Yeah. Like, do you feel drawn? Like, now that you've seen it all the way through, you're just like, I need to watch it from the beginning to see everything that I fucking missed.
The driving force that this movie brings to me is to find other Korean horror films.
Yay! That's what that it makes does. Me so happy.
Yeah, it actually makes you want to be like, okay, well, this is a it's a fundamental film in that, because we always mm-hmm. talk about fundamental American horror things like that kind of sets a precedent, and we've covered quite a few of those already. This is one of the ones for Korean audiences that is a fundamental horror film.
I'd say this in, like, Old Boy.
Well, I mean, that's... Yeah, exactly. They're in the same realm, though.
Yeah, that's like, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And because of that, you know, while we say... We always talk about fundamental horror, whatever it is, there's always other movies later on that are just as good
mm-hmm.
or do this similar things really, really well, and they're just very entertaining. I want to find more films that follow these lines established and see how good they are. So that's what it brings to me. It makes me, that intriguing history part of me that has to fucking know everything.
Yeah.
It bites into that because it was a good movie.
So what do you feel about how time was presented in this film? Like, is that an attractive aspect of a film to you? Like, do you feel like you want to you want to seek out other Korean horror because of how time is sort of like a mind fuck in these movies? Because, like, for me, it's irritating as fuck for the first hour and 20 mm-hmm. minutes, but then the second, or like, but then those last 20 minutes where they explain everything, I'm just like, this is so good. Well, so it's frustrating, but also, you know, not.
I have the exact same feeling.
Okay.
But it's also one of those things where I don't actively want to be frustrated.
Yeah.
But I do want to have my mind blown. So yeah. It makes it harder for me to, I have to be ensured that it's a good movie I'm going to be watching, because the way it's told is just not what I'm used to.
Totally, totally. Yeah. No, I agree. Like, I was watching the movie and I was just like, I know that I need to be paying attention, but I am just so irritated at this movie right now. And that's mm-hmm. what made it kind of hard to watch in some parts. And that's my only critique, but also I feel like that is the only critique that I am not allowed to make because I'm not Korean. Mm-hmm. So, like, or I'm not coming at this from, like, having grown up in, like, yeah. East Asia and, like, having that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's also one of those things that, like, it's frustrating, mm-hmm. but because the resolution is so powerful and so dependent on everything that came before it, like, there's no wasted scenes. Yeah. Like, it all builds in a certain way. Every little scene builds, adds a little piece to the puzzle. Mm-hmm. So because of that, it makes me, again, want to seek more because I hope the resolutions match.
Yeah.
I understand it's probably going to be pretty hard to top that because uh-huh. this is one of those ones that everybody loses their shit about.
Yeah.
But yeah, because...
I have some other ones, like Old Boy is also Korean.
I've seen Old Boy.
So Old Boy is pretty good. I've actually never finished it because...
It's good. It's good.
I know. I've seen scenes. But, and I've had to watch it for my Asian horror class, and I did not finish it because I was just like, eh.
Have you seen I Saw the Devil?
No.
Not graphic. Nah. Have you seen The Man from Nowhere? It's not horror.
No. Most films that you recommend or talk about, I'm just like, uh-huh, and I'm like, what?
That's a film, right?
That's a movie.
Yes.
There are people in that.
Oh, man.
No, but,
Oh, watch all of these, please.
Okay. I have a homework list. I still need to watch Akira.
Okay, watch Akira first.
Well, yeah, because I have your Blu-ray.
That and body horror. Animated body horror in the way that you've seen already. We were talking about the flying Cronenberg shit. Oh, it does it so fucking well in that film.
Oh, in Akira?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were talking about something else. But yeah, totally. I'm excited to watch it. DJ got it fucking stoked when I was like, look at what Anthony let me borrow.
Really?
And DJ was just like, fuck yes!
Oh, DJ would. We like the same shit. Like, me and DJ have a very... one-to-one, like, entertainment favorites.
It's true. Yeah. No? Yeah, actually, now that you... Yeah. Weird. Anyway.
We're Mexicans, man.
But, yeah. So, that's pretty much all I had about the film. Is there anything else you wanted to add before I move? Depending. I need to check time first, but... Any final thoughts, concerns, criticisms?
Final thoughts is this movie makes me really fucking hate the American fucking wannabe versions of these more. But again, still love you, America. You gave me my apartment, but stop remaking Asian horror films. Please, just don't do it.
Just bring Asian horror here.
Yeah, dude. Bring the directors here and be like, here's the budget. Make your fucking movie with these resources. Bam. Yeah. Please.
Well, even then, like, just fund it, but don't, like, produce it.
Yeah, don't put, like, your grubby little fucking producer hands on this shit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But, yeah, so I actually really enjoyed this film. It was the first time I watched it. Drea, my friend who let me borrow all of the content that I quoted mm-hmm. today, she fucking loves this movie. So it was really cool because she was just, because she is not a podcast fan, so she doesn't listen. So she's not going to listen to this, so I can say whatever I want.
Drea sucks.
No, Drea's great. We love Drea.
I like you, Drea. You seem okay.
Yeah, she's great. But she was super excited. And she's like, if you want to talk about it or want to process it, like, just let me know, because, like, I really love love this movie. And I was like, totally. And then I never did because I have no time. But yeah, so I was watching it like last night while I was finishing the episode. Like, that's how fucking crunched for time I was. Because I also had to fucking put out The Fly.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just had a lot.
We work a lot, guys. We do.
It's true. Because like also with the holidays coming up. So when we're talking about like, you know, recording this now, this is coming out the week before Christmas.
Yeah.
So,
and do we have some Christmas shit for you?
No, but we are recording this really far in advance because we have a bunch of shit going on for the holidays. So we're creating a backlog. So we are recording this like in early December, but by the time this comes out, who knows?
Yeah. Who knows what the world's going to be like? Who knows? I've nuked something or I don't know.
Yeah.
Korea doesn't exist anymore.
Don't say that.
No, I'm not saying it's likely. But
listen here, buddy. No, I just got back into K-pop. Don't do
no,
this.
No, I know you're like no. The entertainment has to keep going.
No. But yeah, so that's pretty much our lowdown for A Tale of Two Sisters. What I wanted to do now is I want to show Anthony the previews or like the trailers for both The Uninvited, which is the American remake, as we keep kind of alluding to, and A Tale of Two Sisters, to sort of compare the stories as they're shown in the trailers, because obviously we can't watch.
And the marketing, too.
And now that you mention it.
That makes my nips hard. That's good.
Oh, my God. Guys, I feel unsafe. I gotta go.
It's a very small room.
Okay, so move this way.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, so
we're back, fellas. We made it.
If we sound a little different, it's because we've adjusted accordingly.
Yes, yeah. And we do sound different, Jesus.
Yeah, so, alright.
Is this why some people suck at this? Learn your mic fucking instructions, guys.
Okay, so we won't be able to hear it.
Okay, we got A Tale of Two Sisters trailer right now, full screen.
A House of Lies.
A House of Lies, oh my God.
Oh, the hand. The hand. Like, it's so creepy.
That's actually really well done.
The home, yeah. Oh.
Hey. Oh. The fucking violins in the back.
Wow. Oh, God.
You know what? This reminds me just how good the camera work is in this fucking film.
Yeah. Oh, we get ghosts and shit.
Okay, now it's a little schlocky, but that's just editing right there.
She's scared. Why is she scared? Because you're dead, girl. Okay, so we're getting a lot of creepy camera work, very typical of a horror film. The creepy music, of course, that I mentioned was not used, is being used.
God damn, it's actually really fucking creepy music, though.
Oh my God, and screaming.
It kind of seems a little grindhousey.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little grindhousey, to be honest with you.
Honestly, seeing this trailer, I would expect it to be more violent.
More what?
More violent.
No, I would totally expect that. It's given us all, like, the highlights here.
Hide your fears. The hand.
You know what? It's...
Fear your family. Yeah. So the stepmom is fucking psychotic. Or Sumi is psychotic, but... A Tale of Two Sisters. Oh!
Yeah, you know what? It doesn't really let you know what's going on.
Yeah, it says subtitles A Tale of Two Sisters, but it's, again, the red...
We're waiting for a jump scare.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jump scare happened. Okay.
So, up there, it doesn't say... it says Red Lotus, or Red Rose, whatever.
Wasn't it also... oh, no, that's a different movie. I'm fucking
So up. That was, like, a minute and 37 seconds. So now we're going...
All the highlights. I say it was good marketing.
Yeah, I would say...
A little grindhousey.
I enjoyed it. But, no, I think it gets all of the jump scares out of the way in the trailer.
Yeah. It doesn't give you any indication that there's, like, a really fundamental, like, dramatic story underneath. It's just, like...
This is scary.
Ooh, be scared.
It's very American, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go. Way to do it, Korea.
I know. Okay, so now we're going to 2009's The Uninvited, which, in case you don't know, is also starring Elizabeth Banks, Ariel Kibble, and Emily Browning.
And it made me and my friend Alex make a fictional movie called The Unborn
Which is
heads,
a real
which
movie.
Which is a real fucking movie.
All right, so it's starting. Oh, like... Okay, so right off the bat... dead mom. There's a fire. She can't remember.
And I don't really hate the cinematography, though.
Okay, sisters.
Yay.
They look nothing alike.
They don't.
So I expected them to be... Are they rich? Holy fuck.
Oh, they're really pushing the Elizabeth Banks being a piece of shit angle already, huh? Hey. See, there's actually no ambiguity in this trailer. It's,
No.
It lets you know who the bad guys are.
Oh my gosh. But no, Emily Browning also is pretty common in, like, creepy scenes. Like, I love her in Sucker Punch, even though it's a shitty movie.
Hold on.
So
sorry.
It's the producers of The Ring and Disturbia.
Disturbia was awesome.
Oh, she had a dream.
Huh.
Oh, the music.
Oh, we got some pop music, y'all.
We got some, like, rock type. It is very Disturbia.
It is.
Murder children? Okay, this plot is nothing.
Yeah, it's given you a lot of backstory already.
What is going on? Oh, I've seen this scene.
With the pearls?
Yeah, she chokes her, or tries to.
Oh, hey, there's the bag, though.
And the
bed?
And,
hey! Okay, that hand's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. Huh. So.
I'm seeing some parallels.
There's some parallels.
Why is there a knife? Why is there needles? Why is the...
Why is she drowning herself? Question mark?
I don't know, but there's more knives.
Just
and a hand.
Don't die.
See, this is what I mean. Fucking grimdark bullshit.
This is also the same...
Why is there an explosion?
What's going on? What? This is so 2009.
Hold on, look at those patty lips.
The uninvited.
Yeah.
So, this sets it up to be like a shock at the end that it's all psychological.
Oh, man. Okay.
Okay.
Well, we saw some shit today.
So that was our first attempt at live reacting to fucking trailers. So we'll see how that turned out.
Yeah, it's going to be just screaming from distances like, what the fuck is that?
No, but there's a lot going on with The Uninvited, and it has a very similar plot line, but I feel like there leaves a lot to be desired.
There's an explosion in there.
Several.
And knives.
And needles.
And, like,
but,
just
so
black liquid and, like, grimdark bullshit.
Yeah, they're also playing on Sumi and Sumion because their names are Anna and Alex. Like, they have the same first syllable.
Yeah.
So it's the same type of deal.
That's a good way to do
but
it, actually.
But also, I really, really, really thought the first time I saw trailers for this movie, I did not think Ariel Kibble and Emily Browning were siblings.
No.
Like, I thought they were friends. Like, I swear to God, I thought they were, like, stepsisters or some shit. Because I'm like, y'all don't even look closely related.
They don't. They have no features that align with each other.
Sumi and Suyeon look fucking, like,
yeah.
Could be identical. Like, they look very, very similar. Like, enough that you can tell them apart, but they also both have, like, shortish black hair, so.
Mm-hmm. But one clearly looks like the little sister, and,
yeah,
like, it's all, it's done well. This one, I don't know. I guess I should watch the movie, but, like, again, this is the trailer where I basically scoffed and turned my back on all this type of horror until the cycle ran dry when one of the Ring sequels flopped.
Yeah.
and we'd have to deal with it anymore.
And the evil was defeated.
Yes. By bad commercialism.
Yes.
Thus is the American way.
So, I think this is just as good a place as any to wrap up for the week.
Yes. So, guys... Thank you very much for listening. We have some special shit for Christmas for you next week.
I'm super excited. This is a movie Anthony has seen, I have not seen, which is pretty much the traditional...
We saw the trailer for it, though.
I saw the trailer for it, and I didn't know that it was for this movie. Anthony and I went to go see John Carpenter's The Thing last week.
Yes, at a screening in Santa Ana. At the Frida Cinema, fucking lovely establishment.
Oh, yeah. Check it out if you're in Southern California.
And you like watching old movies on the big screen because they do it really, really well.
Yeah, it's super cool. It was a really fun experience. But, yeah, so we watched The Thing after many a gin drink and many... It was really late, and it was a work day. I was trying to keep my eyes open during the movie, dude.
Yeah, but the booze helped.
No, the booze made me tired.
Booze helped me.
Oh, good for you. No, but it was a really fun experience, and it was really cool, and we got to, you know, hang out, which is always fun.
And see a trailer for the movie we're going to watch next
week. Yeah, which I didn't know, and that's what I was getting to. They played a trailer for the movie that we're covering next week, and I didn't know that that was what, like, the style of the movie. Like, I thought it was, like, comedy horror.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's totally not.
It's totally not.
No, it's totally not.
Like, I totally thought that's what it was, and that's sort of, like, your hint there. It sounds like it could be, like, a humor horror thing, but it's totally not. So yeah. I watched the trailer, and I'm like, this looks fucking terrifying. And then the title screen came up, and I was just like, oh. And yeah. Anthony's like, yeah, we're covering that.
Mm-hmm. It's fundamental horror. It's, for film historians, you're gonna love this bitch. No. You really are.
And Anthony's writing it, so you know it's going to be great.
Hey, thank you. We get to talk about some true crime, too, that's related to this film, which is actually fucking awesome.
So, yeah, there's your second clue.
Yes.
So, thank you, as always, for joining us. Please, 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 if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You know, we are pretty much everywhere, so tell your friends, because, you know, having an Android is no excuse anymore.
Yeah, you can rate on Spotify. There's an app, so you can do it.
You can't rate us on Spotify.
Fuck. Okay, I'm wrong.
No, yeah, you're wrong.
You can rate us. No, you can't. You can rate us on Podcast Addict. That's what I use.
I don't use Podcast Addict, but I know on Apple you can. So that's Spotify and Apple are the extent of my podcast
streaming
knowledge. But anyway, follow us there or subscribe to us there. And if you're so inclined, hit us up on social media. You can find us on Twitter at HorrorPeoplePod, and you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast.
Yes. See? It's simple, guys.
I almost fucked up spelling it, so who's to say? And then if you feel so inclined, you can follow Anthony on Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and you can follow me, Alex, at the Blonde Dictionary, which is blonde with an E.
Yay. It's a really good username. I still love it. Like, I don't know why.
No, it was my clever moment in high school, and I just kind of stuck.
See? That's what Hyrulean Hustler was, too. 15-year-old me was like, I'm going to put this shit on. We were all nerds, so it's like...
Yeah, you're still a nerd.
Yeah, fuck.
No. Yeah, the Blonde Dictionary was that for me. I was just like, I'm blonde and my last name's Webster. Put those together. Blonde Dictionary.
I'm like, I like Zelda and I need another H word.
Hustler. That's cool. But yeah, so thank you for joining us, guys, and we'll catch you on the next one.
All right. Peace out, fucks.
Bye.